This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Colin Murphy was a journalist, advocate, and activist who was also a mentor and friend to many in the St. Louis region. His passion for telling the stories of queer people and raising awareness around regional and national news and politics kept queer community members in the St. Louis metro area informed. That lay at the heart of Boom Magazine, which he founded in 2014. But Colin also inspired folks to move, and he did that with them. If there was an event by or for queer folks, you knew Colin would show up because he knew how important it is to be present. On February 22nd, Colin Murphy lost his life to a years-long battle with cancer. It's a loss that leaves a huge hole in the STL queer community. He remains very present, however, in the people who knew and loved him. And here to talk with us about that and reflect on Colin's legacy of passion, commitments, and just joy, we welcome three guests who knew him well. Joan Lipkin with That Uppity Theater Company, James Lesh, former publisher of Vital Voice, and Colin Lovett, co-founder of Boom Magazine. Thanks to each of you and welcome to the show and condolences on your loss.
Thank you. That was a beautiful intro.
Yeah, thank you. Perfectly done.
Now, Colin Murphy was an advocate, activist, and journalism, as we noted. Colin, would you say that your friend and colleague was any of those things first and foremost, or did he somehow manage to wear all those hats at the same time?
He managed to wear all the hats at the same time. I mean, he lived and breathed it. From the day that we met, our very first conversation was about politics and activism. We met on a bus to the National Equality March in 2009, which was, a bunch of us going to D.C. to protest, or I guess to advocate, the recently elected President Obama, to basically keep him accountable to the promises that he made to the LGBT community. So from the very beginning, he was an activist, he was an advocate, and, obviously he evolved into, being my best friend. But, he wore all the hats at the same time.
Yeah. Now, in the field of journalism, there is a tension, if not a friction, between a person's being a journalist and an activist at the same time. And for journalists who are part of marginalized communities, holding those two apart can be such a challenge because certain identities are routinely politicized. Joan, in your view, what was it about Colin Murphy's work that turned the idea of keeping journalism and activism separate on its head?
Wow, what a great question. First of all, I want to say that neutrality is a myth. And that there are some things when people will say, well, what are the both sides of the issue? To my mind, there are not two sides of an issue when it has to do with marginalizing, actively, legislatively discriminating against people, promoting fascism, right? I mean, these things have to be called out. And the thing that was extraordinary about Colin is that, and I think in part it's because of when he came of age. He came of age at a time when it was the height of the AIDS crisis. It was before marriage equality. It was during the ban on serving openly in the military. And he realized how much was at stake. And frankly, how much is it at stake now? Because we talked about that even just a couple of months ago. So he understood the threats to queer existence and understood that journalism, legitimate journalism with facts, was a way to protect people's lives. So I don't feel that there was any kind of a conflict between his being an activist and his being a journalist with tremendous integrity. Do you not agree with that, Colin?
Just because I co-ran Boom with him and served, we answered this question a lot, right? Because, the facts came first. And his journalistic integrity was what he valued above all else. But to the point that, it was activist journalism to an extent because it was LGBTQ people telling LGBTQ stories. And we knew that through that perspective, we would do justice you know, whether it wasn't misgendering somebody or whether it was, you know, adding the extra perspective on, you know, on it, it was stories for the community, by the community. But I would say that facts and journalistic integrity always rang true at the highest level of everything we did.
Which made it then for everyone.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Now, James, Colin Murphy was a generation older than you, and you two met and worked together for over 10 years at Vital Voice.
Yeah.
What effect did that generational difference or interplay have on your working relationship with Colin? And, you know, did it impact your career in any fashion?
Yeah, I mean, Colin was a huge impact in my career. I was fortunate to meet him very early on in my coming out process. And, you know, we talk about Colin as an activist and as a journalist and as, you know, this person who really preserved our history as a community. And it sounds very serious, but he had this way of doing it with such light and levity that really drew you into him, right? So you would ask these questions and, you know, you could just sense that he was excited to share knowledge with you, and you could really sense his passion for what he was doing. And that, you know, really translated, and I felt like left a big imprint on me as a young queer person to see someone who had really helped, you know, advance so many different aspects of the queer community, and to see that he wasn't looking down, he was bringing people forward with him, mm-hmm. which I think is what made him such a powerful activist.
Yeah. Joan, you had talked about the generation in which Colin Murphy came up. You're a little bit older than he was. How did you feel about the relationship that you had with him and the differences and commonalities that existed between you as queer people who came up at different times?
Yes, well, we were very close. We were both activists, and we appreciated that we worked in different media. So his platform was journalism, and mine was the arts.
Mm-hmm.
But both of those were used to try and advance human rights. And we talked about a lot of different things, and first of all, I want to say that my relationship with him goes back so far. Colin Lovett was talking about how he and Colin Murphy met during the National Equality March on the bus, right,
mm-hmm.
to go to D.C. and to advocate. I had written a play called Beyond Stonewall, Why We March, in 2009, and Murphy was familiar with that. And we used that play to advocate for the march and also to raise money for people to be on the bus. So, you know, our relationship was interwoven with art, politics, and history. Another way that we were connected was that I wrote a piece in 2010 called The State of Marriage, and it was about people who took bus trips that were organized by Ed Reggie and Scott Emanuel to go to Iowa to get married.
Mm-hmm.
And then come back where it was legal, and then come back to Missouri where it was not legal at that time. And Colin and his late husband, Kurt Ross, were on the bus, mm-hmm. and they got married on one of these bus trips. And I remember Colin telling me that they had passed through Bowling Green, Missouri on this bus trip, where eight generations of his ancestors were buried. And he said to me, well, they were fighting for one kind of revolution, and we're fighting for another. So he always understood the significance of history, of the possibility of art to engage people and to share a broader message, and also of politics. And if I could just add one more thing, which is something that I will always be indebted to both of the Collins for, is that they were very interested in electoral politics. But everything that we did, they showed up at. So when we had our very first Dance the Vote event outside Tom Ray's iconic record store, Vintage Vinyl, for a couple of dozen people on a rainy afternoon, they showed up. They videotaped, they took photographs, they understood that we were looking for a different way to engage people in voting literacy and voter registration. And I have to say that not everybody in queer media understood this. There was a real chasm between an emphasis on celebrity and fashion and those of us who wanted that, but also hard news. Mm-hmm. And Murphy really understood that we had to tell the stories of our community because these stories were not necessarily going to be covered in mainstream media.
Right.
And it's really important to have identity-specific publications. Mm-hmm. We have the St. Louis American. We have the Jewish Light. We needed a dedicated publication for LGBTQ plus issues. And the fact that they did Boom and it was digital, it was ahead of its time. Now we go, wow, of course. But back then it was a very courageous and bold, committed thing to do.
Right. And I think what you are talking about, Joan, really speaks to the totality of a person. And in the introduction, we said that one of the legacies that Colin Murphy leaves is one of joy. And Colin was a character. I mean, we can hear it in what each of you has shared already. And despite the adversity he faced, he led with joy, and that was part of who he was. James, how do you think he was able to stay so positive given all of the things that he had to face?
You know, if I had a clear answer for that, I would empower everyone to live life in the same way. You know, as we talked about earlier, Colin lived through so much, including the HIV and AIDS crisis. He was a huge, passionate fan of drag queens who really pulled the community forward through the AIDS crisis. And so I think in those moments, he saw that, you know, as Joan said as well, art, creativity, entertainment, there are ways to find joy and celebration and still impact change and drive things forward. And I think, you know, having seen the power of that, he carried that through to everything else that he approached in his journalism and his activism.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking with James Lesh, Joan Lipkin, and Colin Lovett, three friends and colleagues of the late Colin Murphy, co-founder of Boom Magazine. He died February 22nd after battling cancer. We need to take a quick break, but we'll continue this remembrance of Colin Murphy when we come back. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation about Colin Murphy, co-founder of the St. Louis-based LGBT publication Boom Magazine. Colin died February 22nd after battling cancer. We're talking about his legacy as a queer advocate, mentor, and friend with Joan Lipkin, James Lesh, and Colin Lovett. Speaking of the showing up that we mentioned in the introduction, I know that all of you have fond memories of Colin, whether it had to do with times you were out on the field reporting or at political rallies or maybe in another state attending a show. You know, is there an anecdote that you can share about Colin Murphy as a friend, whether it was on the job or just at work living life? Colin?
Yeah, kind of saying like
not
if I had
you
a
can
good,
say on air.
I mean, we were very good friends. I mean, if I had a clear answer for one anecdote, I mean, we were so just kind of piggybacking off of something that Joan mentioned, you know, and kind of going back to when I at least joined community activism with the march to D.C. I mean, Murphy has been doing it for all of his life through the AIDS crisis, through the 80s, the 90s, you know, and the entire evolution of the movement. You know, but it really was about showing up to things, and it was about showing up to the march in D.C. It was about I was on the bus trip to Iowa where Colin Murphy and Kurt were married, and you know, it was about going to that. It was about going to, you know, all of the events in the community, the prides, the drag shows, the political events, showing up represented as, you know, the LGBT people in the room, and then later is it, you know, the LGBT journalists in the room asking the tough questions, holding, you know, the powerful accountable through that lens, you know, and everything we did was through that perspective. And he, you know, I think also touching on just him as somebody who would bring joy into the world, you know, his struggle didn't end, you know, with the AIDS crisis. I mean, it really led up to his death. He lost his husband to COVID and did so in isolation and then had cancer for 2 years, you know, and dealt with the isolation and the, you know, the loneliness towards the end there too. And, you know, I think that he, throughout his entire life, you know, faced with monumental struggle, really was a beacon of just setting an example of how to persevere with joy and seeing the positive side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and really is an inspiration to us all.
Yeah,
I'll agree with that. As a young queer person, one of the first memories I have with Colin is going to Springfield, Illinois for a rally and kind of getting out of the car and being like, okay, now what?
Uh-huh.
And he really had to help me understand, like, we're here to take up space. Like, we're here to make ourselves seen and heard. Like, you know, part of it is just making yourself and your presence known. To, I mean, something as simple as showing up in the streets and identifying yourself as gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, whatever it may be, is literally just being present and saying, I exist. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for a young queer person at that point in my life, that alone was radical to me, that I, you know, just standing in the street and acknowledging our existence collectively was powerful enough to impact change.
Yeah. Is there anything, James, that you can do today that you know is because of the work that Colin Murphy did before you?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, a list, truthfully.
Like
I mean,
really
Colin.
Simple thing.
Like Colin Murphy
thing.
Was the first person I met who told me they were living with HIV, who said so without an ounce of shame or any sense of guilt. And I had, for the first time in my life, seen this in a way that was like, okay, this is not someone's death sentence or someone's burden or something that you should look, even the sense of like, well, we want to help people like that, right? But saying like, maybe they don't need our help, right? Like, he's fine. Look at all the incredible work he's doing, and this doesn't define him, right? So I think just helping see people in our community is not just one-dimensional, not mm-hmm. just, you know, oh, there's that gay person.
Yeah.
There's this drag queen, right? But everyone has true depth and identity. Yeah.
And Joan, for you, what did joy look like in Colin Murphy as you saw it?
Oh, well, you know, I think that I agree with Colin Lovett. He had so many challenges and losses. And to have HIV as long as he did and then have some additional health challenges on top of that was very difficult. But I believe that he drew joy from having a sense of purpose.
Mm.
And his sense of purpose was community and service. So he would just light up when he saw people that he knew.
Mm-hmm.
And he would hug us, right? And then I would scold him about smoking.
Fair, that's fair.
But Joan, I'm not drinking. I got to do something.
Right?
He would show up with those gigantic coffee cups that I was like, should anybody been consuming coffee in that like quantity?
So, you know, your descriptions are providing something of like images for us. And there are literal images of Colin, of his reporting in several local and national publications. And his voice is archived at the Missouri History Museum as part of their larger Gateway to Pride initiative. So, you know, Colin's going to live on in the media he created and was captured in. But what is one thing that you'd like those who didn't get a chance to know him, but will feel the effects of his work? What is it that you want them to understand, Colin?
That's a good question, because there's so many things. I think he really believed in the next generation of queer people, of activists, of the community. He believed that the work that he was doing was part of standing on the shoulders of those who came before him and being able to allow the next generation to stand on his, you know. And James, you and I are perfect examples of that, right? Of people that grew up watching somebody like Colin Murphy show us how it's done, and the work that we do today carries his legacy forward. And I think, you know, there are so many ways that you can still experience Colin Murphy, like you mentioned with the oral history project that he did with the Gateway to Pride. That'll be coming out this summer, which is a must see. Mm-hmm. Bring your Kleenex. but you know, through the work on Boom, you know, we have all of his work archived. You can see images of him and what he did. And I think that was his biggest fear, is that, you know, everything that he did wouldn't live on and wouldn't be remembered and wouldn't be seen. And so it's up to us to make sure that we don't forget and that we carry his torch forward.
Mm-hmm. Now, as we close here, James, I know that you did some DJing.
Oh, gosh.
In the past.
This is a minute ago.
If you were to choose a song to dedicate to Colin Murphy, what song would you choose?
That's a really hard question. My knee-jerk reaction to that is, again, Colin always had these like ways of imparting queer history of all a very diverse range of queer history among us. And, you know, for a while I was the Show Tunes Tuesday DJ at the Loading Zone, and he told me, did you know that Ethel Merman actually has a disco album?
Oh.
Which I just found like, just like, that's the kind of camp queer knowledge that would come out of this man.
Sure.
And then, you know, our work day would devolve into us listening to the Ethel Merman disco album.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe something from that. He's, again, a big theater fan, so maybe something from, like, Lacage. I don't know. That's a really good question. That's a hard one.
Jimmy, I have to say, I was surprised that you weren't going to say you're obsessed with the Spice Girls, but
but that's me, not Colin. If anything.
That's you, I know, but I will survive. That's the obvious choice.
You know, in hindsight, I was thinking, I mentioned Lacage, and it's that I am who I am.
Yeah,
that's good too.
Yeah.
I think of Holding Out for a Hero and having a drag queen drop out of the ceiling into the splits, and
okay.
He would have lived for that.
Yeah. Joan, is there something that you will always look at or see, a piece of art, whether it is for stage or some other kind, that will always make you think of either your relationship with Colin or what he meant to the community here?
Well, I'm thinking about Bayard Rustin in this moment as we're talking. When we brought Walter Nagel, who was Bayard Rustin's partner, to the Missouri History Museum, I personally have never seen Colin be starstruck before. He interviewed all these presidential candidates. He talked to so many people, but he was really moved and overwhelmed to meet Walter because he had been Bayard's partner. And so as I'm seeing, thankfully, a renaissance of the well-deserved interest in Bayard Rustin, it brings Colin to mind because he said, "Joan, I can't believe I talked to Walter." But I wanna just say one more thing that, in terms of legacy, if I might, and that is that I feel that part of Colin's legacy is in what this younger generation is doing. I think that, Colin, love it, I'm going to embarrass you, but you're a friend, so hopefully you'll forgive me, and I'll send you a contribution. I think the fact that you're running for state rep in the first time that it could possibly be a Democratic seat in the Missouri House is a very big deal. And in my mind, because Colin cared so much about participating in electoral politics and civic engagement and helping younger gay people to understand that they must be involved, because sometimes there is a disconnect. We go, wow, the system is not serving us. So sometimes people think they want to opt out. And to Colin, there was no opting out. So the fact that Colin Lovett is running for office, honestly, I feel like this is part of Colin Murphy's legacy. And I want to thank you, Colin Lovett, for doing this.
No, of course, it's my pleasure. And, you know, I would just add one anecdote that comes to mind. You know, when I was young and interning with Vital Voice, one of the very first things I got to do was drive to Jefferson City with Colin Murphy. And we took the very first picture of the very first LGBT caucus in the State House. And it was Mike Colonna, Jolie Justice, and I guess it was the Senate too, and Jeanette Mott Oxford. And to be there in the Capitol to take the picture to say, wow, look, these are elected people in Missouri who are out and LGBT. And now, I guess, what, 15 years later, to be running to represent in the same kind of way, like it really comes full circle to me.
I have to add to what Joan said about Bayard, too. I had the privilege of working with Vivint Health here in St. Louis, and I was at one of their AIDS Walk fundraisers, and Cleve Jones was in town to be the chairperson for the event. And after, you know, the dust had settled and everyone went home, we went back to his hotel and had a drink at the lobby, and I was just like, I am, first of all, shocked that no one else took this man up on a, you know, having a cocktail. This was Harvey Milk's right-hand man, right? This inspired TV series. I mean, he's such a storied person in the LGBT community. And to just sit there and have a drink with this man is just one of those moments where I just felt like Colin Murphy helped me appreciate who this was in our community and the opportunities that we have. And in those moments, you know, when you're celebrating his life or just when you're out at the queer bars in general, talk to your elders and have deep conversations with them because you're very much amongst people who could be directly impacting the lives we live today through the change they've helped impact.
James Lesh is former publisher of Vital Voice. Colin Lovett is co-founder of Boom Magazine. And Joan Lipkin is with That Uppity Theater Company. Thank you, each of you, for taking time to talk to us today about Colin.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much.
A public celebration of life for Colin Murphy will be held at Just John Nightclub on Sunday, March 24th. To close out today's show, let's listen to a bit of Gloria Gaynor's cover of I Am What I Am, a show tune originally from La Cage aux Folles.
This episode was produced by Maya Norfleet.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Dorr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
St. Louis on the Air proudly supports local artists by using music from Life Creative Group.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.